How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our True Crime Podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Now, from Edward October, comes a completely new kind of retro horror experience. A journey into the bizarre and horrifying world where nightmare and nostalgia coexist. October Pod. It saturates your streaming device with terror. Is one of these co-eds the disciple of an elder demon? Or are they just playing occult games? Not so innocent occult games. Eager to test the limits of experience. An elder demon is stalking. October Pod, a retro horror show for bold individualists. Available now on YouTube, Vimeo, Podbean, Podchaser, and at OctoberPodVHS.com.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
It's me, Cam. How are you?
Because,
you know, it's been so long since we've been on here.
Yeah, you're
just a, you know,
complete dork. But yes, I know. We're finally back. Finally.
Look who's back. Look who's back. Boys are back. Damn, boys are back.
So how have
you
been?
All right, so lots of changes. I could sing changes, but I'm not going to.
I know. The world is on fire,
it seems. It is melting away. Yes, it is.
And we had a planned vacation break, which led to a little longer break. But now we are back and we're ready for action.
Ready for a close-up, Mr. DeMille.
We apologize for our absence. Listen to me. We apologize for our absence. But now we are back and we're ready to get to it. Hope everybody is doing well.
I do, too. I was wondering about everybody and everything just because, you know, it's a crazy time, let me tell you.
It's very emotional and, yeah.
Well, just because we've been gone so long, let's stop the banter there and we'll just kick it off.
Let's go. Yeah. Tell me what you got for me.
Okay. I like how sometimes you just set up that ball for me to knock it out of the park. So, Jen, I think if you had to hide a body... Like in the United States, where you're pretty sure it would never be found, or if it was found, it would be very hard to identify, perhaps. Where might you think that might be? Where would you hide a body?
In a cemetery.
Ooh, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's good, but that's not it. But that's good. Okay. I like that.
Yeah, okay. That's where I would go.
Okay, so where I would go,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be, it's a terrible place, but deep in the South. In the murky, muddy, swampy areas, you know,
mm-hmm.
where it's very hard to get around. A lot of it is like hard to get to at all if you can't even get there. But, you know, I'm a big chicken, so that would never happen because I'd be scared of that. I'd see something.
Gators, too, and all sorts
of critters.
Gators,
snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, no thanks. However, today's case takes us deep into Georgia to the Flint River, which is just south of Atlanta, Georgia, if you're from those parts. And, you know, this is a marshy, mucky area. It's prone to hunters of all kinds.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun. Get it? That was my intro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. See, yeah. All right. Here we go.
Hunters, whether human or animal, correct?
Correctamundo.
Got ya.
Mm-hmm. I like how you put that together, Jen. Thank you. And also, I feel a little rough here, so people just bear with us. Has it been 5 weeks? I don't even know.
It's been a while. Been a long time. Yeah. So, I mean, we even had problems logging in and setting up our computers and everything, which if you follow us, no one's surprised by that comment at all.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We everything was going great. And then all of a sudden, you couldn't hear me.
Right.
I had no sound or whatever.
Yep.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for bearing with us. And here we go. It is December 20th, 1997, when two hunters are out for the afternoon. You know, they're looking to bring home a little duck for Christmas dinner, and they stumble upon something. Unfortunately for them, Jen, that something was not the holiday feast that they had envisioned, but the body of a woman who, from the looks of it, had been out there for a while. So the men called the police immediately, and due to the location, two responding counties arrive, Fayette County and Clayton County. Now, the river where the body was found, that the river kind of divided it and made it two counties. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Which is pretty smart.
It was kind of the border. It made the border of the county. Yeah.
So police determined that the woman had been on the shores of the water for some time. Now, she was kind of half submerged, half not. She is nude, except for a plastic bag tied around her head.
Oh.
Her body had been weighted down with cement blocks. As officers look closer, they can easily see what was the cause of death. Two gunshot wounds to her head. So she was obviously shot before she was thrown into the river or placed into the river.
Right.
As they're working to secure the scene and collect evidence, another officer's up on the bridge, and he's kind of just taking a look around. And you know, it doesn't take long. He notices something. On the other side of the river, now this would be the Fayette County side. The first body was found on Clayton County. The Fayette County side is the opposite side. He notices a red type of material, like a blanket of some sort. And it is similar to the body they just found. It's on the banks of the river, kind of half in, half out. Well, he yells to them, hey, there's something over there. Go look. They're wondering if that could be connected to the person that they just found. As police get closer, they can tell that it's a sleeping bag. But when they pull it from the water, they know the sleeping bag is not empty. Once on the banks, another female body is discovered inside the sleeping bag. This woman, however, was not nearly as decomposed as the first one, letting investigators know that she had been killed much more recently. Also, unlike the first, she had clothing on, but police officers noticed there's a hole in the garments that she was wearing on her pants, like her leggings, whatever, in the crotch area. They also noticed she had been shot 3 times. Mm-hmm. Gunshot wounds were found in the back of the head as well as leg and the abdomen areas. Like the first, a cinder block was tied to her body to weight her down as well. Both victims, it would turn out, were shot by a .38 caliber weapon. Since each body was found on the same river but different sides, as I had talked about earlier, meant that both the Fayette County and the Clayton County Sheriff's Department would work the murder with the corresponding location of the bodies. Clayton County would handle the first victim, which was the woman that was believed to have been dead for at least 2 months. Now, this is December, Louisiana, so it is winter, but if you take that back 2 months, the weather was a little bit nicer, obviously, which would indicate a more rapid decomposition. Because of this, there was really only one way to identify her, and that was through her dental records, her teeth. There was literally nothing else left, which is awful. So what the police are going to do is they're going to try to reach out to the local areas, see if anybody had been reported missing anywhere in the time frame from that area 6 months back, right? Mm-hmm. So any time between December all the way to back to June to see if anybody around that area had reported anybody missing. Then they're going to forward the dental records and try to make a match. Now, Fayette County is on the other side of the river, and they're going to work the other homicide. The autopsy would later reveal that the woman was killed only a few days ago. Since she was out there in December for such a short time, like I said, her decomposition was not nearly as advanced as the first
one.
She would be identified as 31-year-old Liddy Evans. Liddy was a divorced mom with four small children, and she was currently living with a man by the name of Joe Cleveland. Joe Cleveland was a firefighter by trade and by day. But during his free time, Jen, he liked to party, and I mean party, often with people that weren't exactly, let's see, how shall we say, rule followers. You know, the area drug dealers, just small-time criminals, things like that. Mm-hmm. The couple, by all means, were known to be in love, and all their friends said that they got along really well. There weren't any issues that they knew about in the relationship. Friends would tell officers that the couple were planning a little getaway, a mm-hmm. little vacay, and they were supposed to leave around December 17th. Since family and friends knew that the couple were going out of town, it wasn't a shock to them that they had not heard from the couple. Police needed to talk to Joe to find out about Liddy's last days, but there's just one little problem. They can't seem to locate Joe Cleveland either.
Oh.
A few weeks pass when the Fayette County Police are able to make a missing persons match. The dental records were able to make a positive ID from the decomposed woman that was found on the Flint River. The woman was 45-year-old Betty Jo Eflin. Now, Betty's daughter, Linda, had filed a missing persons report on her mother after 2.5 weeks of no contact from her mom. Betty Jo was brought to Georgia by way of her job. She actually lived in Fort Worth, Texas, but she worked in the trucking industry, and she traveled to Georgia a lot. And she had been traveling to Georgia earlier in 1977.
So that's part of her route to go?
Correct. Okay. And that's why Linda didn't really... It took her a little bit longer than I would say most people because of, you know, you're thinking that your mom went on this long truck haul or whatever, and you don't hear from her, but that doesn't immediately send up red flags. Well, then Linda started making some phone calls to people, and nobody had heard from her mother. So that's when she knew something was wrong, and she did go and file a missing persons report.
Good for her. Yeah.
Much like Joe Cleveland, Betty ran with a bit of a dangerous crowd that liked to dabble in drugs and life on the wild side. During one of her visits to Georgia, she met a man who caught her fancy, mm-hmm. caught her eye. Fred Wyatt was a truck driver as well, on paper. But what he really was hauling, what he made most of his money from, was the transportation of marijuana.
Oh.
Now, in 1977, it's way different then than it is now, right? But I think even if you transport a lot of that, that's still a big problem today. Right?
I would assume so, but I'm not up on my marijuana law.
Betty fell fast for the bad boy, but Fred was not the nicest to her. In fact, her daughter, Linda, noticed some injuries one day and mm-hmm. asked her mom what happened, and Betty would claim that she fell. But, you know, Linda knew differently. You kind of know. And plus, I think it was like on her arm. Her arm was all banged up, but just one arm, and it was like higher up in her arm. You know what I mean?
Love does not have to hurt, ladies. Just remember that.
Truth. It was about this time that Betty told her daughter that Fred had proposed and the two were going to get married. Needless to say, Linda's not too thrilled about this. So just 2 months later, Fred called Betty's daughter, Linda, to tell her that, you know, I just got home from this long haul trip and Betty's missing. But not only that, it looks almost like somebody broke in the house and there was a struggle. There was a mess left in his house. Well, Linda, already kind of hesitant and suspicious of Fred, was not very happy to hear that information. So immediately she calls police and lets the police know that Fred had called her and told her this. Police head over to talk to what we know, because that's always the case, the first person to be suspected of murdering someone, their wife or their husband, is always the opposite, right? The mm-hmm. spouse. So they head over to talk to Fred Wyatt. Banging on the door and peeking in the windows, officers determine that Fred is not home. They attempt to find him, but just like Joe, he's gone. He can't be located either.
I'm kind of suspicious.
Something's a little wrong. It is now more than a bit strange that two women are dead and their significant others are also missing. Police dig in and they start looking through nearby police reports from neighboring towns to see if either of the men had been arrested, thinking that maybe that they were arrested, sitting in jail, not able to contact anybody. But what they find out reveals exactly why Fred was not returning the police officer's phone calls. It seems shortly after Fred called Betty's daughter to tell her that her mother was missing, Fred got into a fight with a freight train on a dark road.
Oh,
and lost. Fred lost. Yeah. Yes. Because of this, police lost their last chance to question Fred, which was, at this point, their number one suspect. The accident report detailed how Fred's car smashed directly into a speeding train head-on. Fred also had acquired quite a long rap sheet from over the years, but he was not one to kill himself. He really thought too much of himself. So police are starting to wonder what exactly is going on in this southern community.
Well, I have a question. Did the engineer on the train, was he saying that the car was driving towards them or was the car stopped?
It didn't say, but I like what you're thinking, Jen. It did drive into the train, but the train wasn't exactly speeding. It wasn't going super fast. It was going slow. You know, like as the trains come to
into towns, they slow down, right?
Slow down a little bit, right? So it's not going that full speed, right?
So maybe it was just put in drive and it was kind of idling down.
Yep, we're going to get to that. I like the way you're thinking that, okay. Jen. So police pull accident photos to see if anything sticks out, and boy, does it. Fred was a big guy, and Fred's car was pretty small. It was a small little, I mean, this was like late 70s. I would say it was looked like a Pinto or like a neat, you know, like a just a smaller car, right? Not a lot with the hatchback. Fred was a large man. So when you look at the photo, you can clearly see Fred's sitting sideways in the driver's seat with the door, you know, when the door's open, he's sitting sideways with his legs facing the driver's door. The driver's seat is pulled up close to the steering wheel. And from the photo, you can tell he didn't fit. He could not have fit in that seat and turned his legs to drive. Right? Huh. Like something's amiss here.
Not right. Mm-hmm.
With that discovery that the investigators made with that photo, they petitioned for his body to be exhumed. They need to take another look at his body. Now, I bet, because this is a crime show, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can guess what they find. A .22 caliber bullet hole to his head. Now, this explains how the car seat was in a position of a shorter driver and Fred's body was placed into the car after hitting the train, okay? So much like you said earlier, the car was placed to go into the train, right? Let go, hit the train, and then they believe Fred's body was actually placed into the driver's seat after hitting the train, right? The police also determined that it would have been a non-fatal accident. It wasn't going that fast. The car didn't hit it that hard. And as I said earlier, the train was kind of coming through town. So it was going slow as well. So Jen, police now know that they need to take a deeper, longer look at Fred, okay? Fred, something's not right. Did Fred kill both these ladies? What's going on? Police learned that Fred, well, he liked the ladies. And, you know, he even had a girlfriend before he married Betty Jo. Oh, and after Betty Jo. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her name was Marie Jackson Wyatt. So you're probably questioning because his name was Fred Wyatt. So they were married. No. They were never married. She just adored him so much that she changed her last name to match his.
That's not scary at all.
Thank you. They were actually never legally wed. The couple had been dating for several years, and Fred had taken care of her this whole time. And apparently, after he died, he took care of her too. Fred had some insurance policies, and they were under the name and to be paid out to Marie. And Marie had cashed those in just 3 weeks after he died. Police need to talk to Marie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So police head over there. Marie explained to the police that her and Fred had once lived together, and during that time, they each took out a policy on the other. During this time, after the insurance policies, Marie discovered that Fred was cheating on her with another woman who would turn out to be Betty Jo. In July 1977, Fred moved out and left Marie for Betty Jo. Marie was furious, but claimed she had nothing to do with either of their murders. And I believe the policies were around $13,000 to $15,000. Again, it's the late 70s, but that's still not a huge amount, right? Like if we've watched enough of these shows and read enough of this stuff and heard it, that if you're going to really kill somebody for insurance money, you're going to take out the insurance policy and make it larger. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that was a lot of money back in the 70s. Like what was the year? 1977.
Police go back to the drawing board and they look at some other people that Fred had dealt with. And, you know, most of these people were quite the unsavory characters, if you will, as is the case when one is a major drug dealer. One of these people is a man by the name of Carl Patton, who is 22 years old, and he also happens to be the nephew of Fred. So it's Fred's nephew, Carl. Carl was Fred's partner in his drug business, but he was also the guy who would pay a visit to those who owed Fred money and had neglected to pay, right? Oh, so he was kind of the brawn.
The heavy. Mm-hmm.
Fred liked his bigger than normal nephew. Carl was a tough guy, and Fred really wanted people to be scared of him. So he played up the fact that Carl was big and bad. In fact, he would tell people that Carl was a member of the Dixie Mafia, and he wanted that to circulate. So if you're gonna not pay somebody back, it's not going to be Fred, right? Like, you definitely want to get your money to Fred. So he wanted people to be scared of Carl, and so he kind of tended to make up a few little fibs about him. During this time, Fayette County is still desperately trying to locate Joe Cleveland. And with all the information that the Clayton County sheriffs have uncovered, it's not looking very good for Joe. He could be murdered or a murderer, and only time will tell. Now, remember, friends of Liddy and Joe had told police that the couple, they were going on that little weekend getaway back in mid-December. But they also mentioned another couple would be going with Liddy and Joe. That couple? Carl and Norma Patton. Suddenly, one man has connections to all of the victims, and that would be Carl Patton. Dun, dun, dun. Investigators from each county head over to have a little chat with Carl. Carl tells officers that he knew Betty Jo and Fred, and in fact, he still talked to Marie. Now, that was Fred's previous girlfriend and also girlfriend that he tended to see after he married Betty Jo as well. He also tells them that he and Joe had been best friends most of their lives. They had met during childhood, and they had remained close all that time. And that Carl and Norma were supposed to go on that weekend getaway with them back in December, but they had invited Joe and Liddy over, and at their house, they got into a huge fight. Joe and Liddy, right? The couple.
Right.
Carl said, no way. Trips off, and Norma was like, yeah, we're not going with you. Who wants to go on a vacation with people when they're not getting along? Right?
Right.
Police are kind of like, that seems a little fuzzy, a little weird. But, they're missing everybody and the other ones are dead. So they can't go and get any other information at this point. So they kind of know something's off, but they're like, okay. As they're getting ready to leave, they ask Carl, hey, can we get a look at your car? You know, just look around. Carl agrees. When officers open the trunk, they immediately see blood stains. Dun, dun, dun.
So I wonder why Carl, does it ever say why
said
Carl?
That?
Yeah.
Because Carl thought he got it cleaned out, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Blood's a lot harder than, it's not the easy, you know what I mean? Like, it does sometimes leave residue, as we all know. So these stains allowed the Fayette County sheriffs to give Carl and Norma a free trip to the police station.
Oh,
and a search warrant to get into their house for a better look around. Once the police are inside, they find plenty, including a matching sleeping bag that Liddy was found in. Now, often, couples will get matching. You're going to go camping and you're going to buy a sleeping bag for yourself.
Right.
And then maybe whoever you're going
with,
cute, right?
Honey, we got us matching sleeping bags.
Sleeping bags. So they find one, and it is pretty similar to the one that Liddy's body was found in. They also locate 38 caliber shell casings, and they also find a cushion, something that might go on a bench. And it appears to have blood on it.
Oh.
So they take all that in to custody. However, with not much else to go on except for that, which is pretty, it could be, but, it's 1977. There's no DNA. So, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have to kind of just sit there. So police go ahead and release them from custody. Carl and Norma aren't home too long before another knock comes at the door. Hey there, it's Clayton County, which cracked me up because the first ones were Fayette, right? So they got what they needed. So now here comes Clayton County.
Right.
I love that. I thought that was awesome. So Clayton County comes in and they're like, guess what? We have a search warrant for your home now too, in regards to the murder of Betty Jo and Fred. So it seems police received a tip that right after Fred was murdered, Carl, along with his buddy Joe Cleveland, were seen shopping. Removing things from Fred's house.
Oh.
So Joe and Carl went to Fred's house and just kind of helped themselves to whatever they needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So police decide to bring Betty Jo's daughter, Linda, down with them, and they want to bring her inside the home to see if anything, they need to connect Betty Jo and Fred to Carl and Norma better or more, right?
Right.
So they want Linda to come walk through the house with them and see if there's anything that she might be able to point out, things that belong to her mother, right, that they stole. Now, this was a little, it gave me the heebie-jeebies. Carl greeted Linda with one very chilling statement, and he said, nothing else, by the way. He said, you look just like your mother.
Ew.
When Linda entered the bedroom, she was almost physically ill. She felt ill. The bedroom furniture that Carl and Norma slept in was her mother's bed set. They stole the mom's bed set, Betty Jo's bed set. What? Even worse, and this is just so weird, even worse, sitting on the nightstand was a family photo album that belonged to Betty Jo. It literally had family pictures of Betty's loved ones, including baby pictures of Linda and her brother. Why would you steal that? Right? And then keep it like, I don't, whatever. As police escort Linda through the house, she encounters Norma. Now, this was going to be the biggest shock of all. Norma is wearing Betty Jo's Christmas vest. She's wearing Betty Jo's Christmas vest. Are you kidding me? Well, Linda's had enough. She lunges at her and police have to pull her off Norma. Now, I mean, there's just cruel and then there's just something about this level of depravity. Am I right? They steal the stuff, but then they're like, it's like they went shopping. It's like they went to Goodwill, but they actually stole Carl's uncle and his wife's stuff and brought it home.
Right.
And they're using it. Police are now pretty sure Carl is a murderer, but what they don't yet know is where is Joe Cleveland? It is now April 1978, and Joe is about to appear. And when I say appear, I mean on the shores of the Ocmulgee River. Now, just like Betty Jo and Liddy, Joe had been murdered. He was wrapped in a sleeping bag and weighted down with bricks, and he was laid to rest in the river, or tossed in the river, shall we say. And that river's located about 60 miles from the Flint River area where Betty Jo and Liddy had been discovered. Joe had been shot once in the head with a .38 caliber gun. Now, here's a little side note. I talked earlier about the blood that was found in the back of Carl's car.
Mm-hmm.
That blood type was type O, which is a very common blood type, but it also happened to be the same blood type Joe had. Now, normally, you know, that's not that weird. They didn't have DNA, so a lot of times they would just run the blood test to see if they related. But as we know, lots of people have that type of blood, mm-hmm. right? However, the blood that had been found on that cushion, it was tested and it turned out to be a type AB negative, which is the rarest mm-hmm. or if not very rare blood. In fact, according to the website that I went on, only 0.6 of the U.S. population has this very uncommon type. And one of the rare people that had that type was, in fact, Liddy Evans.
Interesting.
So they have both the blood. But again, that's not, you can't, who's to say? You can't prove that that was Liddy's blood or Joe's blood, definitely, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, this is, as we said, late 70s, DNA didn't exist yet, and with no murder weapon located, prosecutors were scared that if they tried Carl Patton and lost, that Carl would walk away a free man and be protected by the double jeopardy rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're sitting there, they're trying to figure out what to do. And I'm sure as hard and frustrating as it had to be for all of them, they decided that they needed more. They needed more. They decided that they just had to sit there and wait and watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a guarantee that when they took him to trial, he would be found guilty and be put away forever. So as spring of 1978 turned into summer and then fall and then, well, many, many more seasons, like 25 years of seasons.
Holy cow, really?
But as the case was lying there frozen, advances in technology would only help thaw this quadruple murder case. Here comes Fayette County cold case detective Major Bruce Jordan. Now, Jordan went through the case files and he knew that if he could find the blood evidence that was recovered back in 1978, that those blood types that they had found in the trunk and on the cushion would now not only be blood types, but would become DNA samples, right? So that means the blood would no longer be considered just a circumstantial find, but a conclusive proof of who the blood belonged to. Major Jordan didn't have to wait too long to find that cushion, as it was still in the box marked Flint River Murders, right? Mm-hmm. Of course it is. The tests are run, and as a surprise to no one, the blood on the cushion proved to belong to Liddy Evans. Now they can conclusively tie Carl to and Norma to the Liddy murders murder, as her blood was found in the cushion at his house. Fast forward, in the dark of night, officers go and pay a visit to Carl Patton, and they wake him from his bed, taking him into custody for the murder of Liddy Evans. That's as well as the other ones, but for sure they're going with her first, since they conclusively proved that that blood belonged to her. Major Jordan stays behind to question Norma. Now, it was then, in the early morning hours, we're talking like after 3 a.m., right? Mm-hmm. That Norma Patton revealed how all of this started and exactly what happened. You ready? Mm-hmm. It's a humdinger. It's a humdinger, I'm telling you. Norma tells Jordan that Carl had told her that he was no longer happy with his arrangement he had had with his uncle Fred Wyatt and their drug racket, I guess, if you will. Carl believed that Fred was skimming off the top and cheating Carl out of his fair take, out of his fair, you know, the amount of money he should be getting. Mm-hmm. In fact, Carl revealed that Fred was not only mean, but he often beat Carl, and Carl hated Fred. He did not like him at all. But that wasn't even the worst part. The old girlfriend of Fred's, Marie, well, Carl had actually become very close to her, and he was furious when Fred betrayed Marie with Betty Jo. But it was the physical abuse that Carl witnessed, like while the two of them worked together, that really threw him over the edge. He was tired of seeing Marie be Fred's punching bag, basically, and he wanted to put an end to that and an end to Fred. So this was kind of a double thing. He gets to get rid of Fred, keep the drug money, and then Fred can no longer beat Marie and or Betty Jo, because he beat her too, obviously.
Such a nice guy.
Cue Carl's BFF Jo. Now, Jo had always watched from afar all the dealings that Carl had. In fact, Jo was kind of envious of Carl. Carl was mean. He was bad. He had a reputation. People were scared of him. You know, they moved away from him if they were near him. They didn't want anything to do with him. Carl also had a lot of money, courtesy of the drug racket he had going. And Jo had always wondered what that would be like to be a criminal, much like Carl, to have people be scared of you and also have money when you want it. He was nosy, I guess. He wanted to see what that was like. When Carl asked Jo for help, Jo saw the chance to see what it was like to become the criminal that he'd always dreamt about. Jo agreed to help Carl get rid of Fred. And so in October of 77, Carl and Jo went to Fred and Betty Jo's house. When they arrive there, they find only Betty home. Betty's really nice. She answers the door. She's like, you know, Fred's on a long, long truck haul. But why don't you guys come in? Come in. I'll get you, you know, have a seat. We'll talk. We'll chat. We'll visit. I'll make you some coffee, some tea, whatever. So as the three of them are, you know, chatting, Betty is gushing about how wonderful married life is with Fred. Fred's perfect. He's the perfect guy. He loves me so much. I love him so much, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Carl is seething and Jo senses it. Carl was always close to Marie. He looked at her like a mother figure, basically. And so Carl is just sitting there quiet. He's just getting angrier and angrier. Jo, you know, senses this opportunity, perhaps desperate to be known as the bad guy. He jumps up, takes out a gun, and shoots Betty Jo right then and there, two times in the head. That was not the plan. Carl is shocked. I mean, it's like, what did you just do? Right. That was not the plan. So he kind of takes a deep breath, right? Because he's a criminal. He's got that criminal mind. He calms down and he begins to clean up the scene. He strips Betty Jo of all of her clothes. Basically, I believe it was so that if any trace of them, because they were visiting, right? Mm-hmm. Any trace of them were on her, since she was like making him little snacks and lunch or drinks, whatever.
Right.
So they, you know, take all her clothes off. They wrap Betty in a blanket and place a plastic bag on her head. They toss her body into the trunk of her very own car, and they drive out to Flint River to dump her body. Carl had put cement blocks on her body, hoping that she would never submerge and tell their deep, dark, horrendous secret. After it was all said and done, Carl threatened his friend Jo, "If you ever tell anyone, including your girlfriend or anybody else, of what we did, death would be welcome for you," basically is what he says, mm-hmm. right? Carl's not a nice guy. After the murder of Betty Jo, Carl then lays low for a little bit until he can put his original plan back into action. Thinks about it, he comes up with one. Carl calls Uncle Fred and says, hey, we need to chat. Let's get together. Let's hang out. Uncle Fred says, heck yeah. And he comes over and he picks up Carl. And you know, Uncle Fred even brought along some cold beers, some brewskis for them to enjoy as they hung out. They decided to drive out to this little country spot, little area out there, shoot some guns, and drink some beer, right? Good old America. Fred is kind of acting weird, and Carl is acting weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they both have an agenda here. Fred is suspicious of Carl, and he really does think that Carl was involved in the disappearance of Betty Jo, right? At this point, her body had not been found, mind you, right? Because it's only been 4 weeks, and she was out there for over 2 months. So you got to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl is nervous, as he knows that he is about to kill his uncle. And he also knows that if Fred gets any inkling that that's going to happen, Fred will beat it to it and surely kill his own nephew, Carl, right?
Mm-hmm.
This family love, it's big, right? So Fred asked him point blank, what happened to Betty? And it was at that point, Carl was like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy. You don't know what it is. Hey, can you go move that can and put it back up for me? So Fred turns around, right? Fred turns around, starts to do that. Carl then waited a second, picked up his gun, and shot Fred dead.
In the back, figures.
And he just, whatever. So this time, Carl had a better plan as to what to do with the body. He didn't want to dump it in the river, so he came up with the plan. Let's make it look like an accident. Hey, a train accident. Yeah, that'll work, right? So he calls his buddy, Joe.
Let's forget about the bullet hole. They'll never be able to find that.
They'll never catch us. But they didn't. They buried him, right? They had to exhume his body to get back to it. So together, the men load Fred into the passenger seat of his own car. Joe drives the car, and he drives it directly into the train. Train's going slow. Joe then takes Fred and drags him over to the driver's seat. And he's a big guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he was kind of placed in there partially, and he wasn't driving. His legs were sticking out, right? These guys aren't the brightest. After Joe had pulled Fred's body into the driver's seat, here comes the waiting car, which is Carl. Carl is in the car behind it, getting ready to pick up Joe. At this point, we're up to two, right? Betty, Joe, and Fred. So Joe and Carl got away with the second murder. Carl and Joe got away with what is now the second murder. But this murder would be deemed an accident. It would also give Marie that insurance money that she was owed, right? The policy. So
right.
Again, twofold, had to be an accident so that he could get the insurance money, or she could get the insurance money. The men were pretty proud of themselves, but there's still more, of course, because we've done the story and we know that there's two more deaths, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coming. Norma continues talking to Major Jordan and revealing what exactly happened. It seems Joe, even though was threatened by Carl to keep his mouth shut, just couldn't do it, right?
They never can.
Nope. How can you?
Well, that was his dream, right? He wanted to be like all gangsta.
Yeah,
and
bad
all
guy.
Kind of stuff.
And gangsta, yeah.
So, of course, he's going to blab.
I bet you can guess who Joe told about these horrendous secrets that he was keeping. Can you take a guess?
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's right, Jen. His girlfriend, Liddy. Mm-hmm. Hence why, right?
Yep.
Liddy had always been frightened of Carl, and she did not like him at all. And, well, this kind of just put it over the top. She's like, I don't like this. So Liddy began to talk. In fact, she called her mom and said, I'm really worried about this. You got to help me out. Carl and Joe murdered somebody. Well, that mom goes and tells people, and you know how it goes. So the rumor comes back around to Carl, and he hears that Liddy singing like a canary. And, well, we know what snitches get, Jen, right?
Yes. They get spoken badly about.
That's correct. Carl talks to Norma and says, hey, what are we going to do about this? The couple agrees that they have to get rid of both Joe and Liddy at this point. Now they just need a plan as to how they're going to do it. This is so real. This would be like me killing you mm-hmm. or you killing me. Like, I just can't. There has to be. You can be a criminal. You can be a murderer. But isn't there some sort of line that you don't cross? I guess not.
If you want to save your ass, you do what you need to do to save your ass.
Lord.
It snowballs. One thing leads to another. And yeah,
that's true. The couple decides, hey, let's invite them to a weekend getaway. We can, you know, invite them. We're going to go. When we go away, that's when we'll kill them. We'll be take your camper out back, go on vacation. So the two couples go away as they had planned. And then Carl kills both Liddy and Joe right there as planned as well. Carl shoots Liddy first in the leg and then the head as Joe is watching this. I can't even imagine this, right? They were like drinking, having fun, sitting in the camper, playing with guns, like just looking at them. And Carl just literally takes the gun up and shoots the girlfriend right in front of his best friend. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine what's going through this, right? Carl then points the gun at Joe and shoots him once in the head. I did think that was telling because he killed everybody else more than once. I mean, he can't kill him more than once. He shot them more than once, right? But with Joe as best friend, he only shot one bullet, right?
Right. Make sure it was sweet. Short and, just, and sweet.
Yeah. Both Carl and Norma dragged the dead bodies to the camper that was located behind the cabin that they were staying at. Carl yells at Norma and tells her to go back to the cabin and clean herself up as well as the mess that they had just left behind. Now, this is the part that really, I don't know, it just really bothered me, and it still has. I woke up this morning thinking about it. As I said, he was not a nice person, but this is just, again, like the line you cross, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alone with the body of his best friend and his best friend's girlfriend, Carl performs a final act of savagery. He rips a hole in Liddy's panties and rapes her dead body.
Oh, Lord.
Get this.
I don't understand that whatsoever. This is,
Carl would later say that he hated her and he was furious at Liddy because she was the reason that he had to kill Joe, who was his best friend. And a quote that he told officers was, "That was the last indignity I wanted to show to her." That gives me chills. Like, he's a terrible person. I don't like him. Then I thought about Norma. Like, she's in there in on this, right? And then does she know what he's doing right now? Just mind blown. I don't get it. Carl then wrapped up their bodies in sleeping bags. And with Norma's help, they loaded them into the car. Now, what Carl didn't realize was that Liddy had left behind some blood on that cushion. Carl was amazed that Betty Joe's body had not yet been located in the Flint River, which he had dumped way back in, you know, several months ago. So he was confident, hey, they didn't find her body. I think we can dump another body there. We'll be safe. With Norma's help, he tosses Liddy's body off the bridge into the Flint River. Then Carl and Norma drive to the other river, the Okmulgee River, I guess is how you say it, and they toss Joe's body in there. And let me just say, this part really bothered me. I was kind of angry that only because I think he's a jerk and knowing what he did to Liddy, it really angered me that he did not throw them together, that he didn't let them be together after death. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, they were a couple. They loved each other. It just really bothered me. He's got two bodies in this river. What's one more? But they drive to another one. I don't know. It just really bothered me. That's Carl's last power move, right? Like, haha, you're not going to be together. That's me looking into that. It didn't say that.
It's yeah, but I don't think somebody like that would even consider anything like that. You know what I mean?
After what he did to Liddy?
That would be something to do. You know what I mean?
Since Norma had provided all these details to investigators, she was offered immunity on the murder charges if she would testify against Carl. She agrees, and Carl pleads guilty to all four murders in order to avoid the death penalty. Again, it kills me that these killers, like, they'll go murder people and they'll go to jail for prison. I mean, they'll go to jail for life, but oh, don't give me the death penalty, right? Oh, that just shocks me. I don't get it.
I don't want to die.
And ironically, it had probably been like the last year before Carl was caught. Norma had started telling Carl, hey, there's this new technology I'm hearing about. It's called DNA. And, you know, I'm afraid it's going to catch up to you. They're going to catch that your DNA on those bodies. And they're going to, you know, they're going to catch us. I think that's a little ironic because that's exactly what happened, right? When lawyers meet with Carl to have him sign off on his guilty plea paperwork and all that stuff, they just talking with him. He obviously killed these people. He knows he did it. His wife just told him. So there's no, you know, he's not going to try to not say he did it.
Right.
However, good old Carl, he's got a few more little tricks up his sleeve. Carl tells them that the plan to murder Fred Wyatt was not his at all. It was actually Marie Jackson Wyatt's idea.
Oh.
Marie had come to Carl promising to share that insurance money, that $15,000, $13,000, mm-hmm. with him if he would simply kill Fred. Carl hated Fred, and while Carl was more than happy to comply, and he got money, right? And he gets to take over the drug business that they had together, right?
Yeah, but still not worth it, but okay.
So investigators, they're a little shocked by that, but that wasn't all. Or should I say that's not the first time Carl killed for Marie? What? Say what? Carl tells them that he killed Richard Jackson, Marie Jackson Wyatt's first husband. Now, that was in 1973, and Marie was married to Richard Jackson. During the time that they were married, Marie met this young man, and they actually became really good friends. And his name was Carl Patton. So Marie met Carl long before being introduced by Fred, right? So she was married to somebody else, and she meets Carl.
Are you
following me?
Yep.
Okay. As their friendship blossomed, Marie shared with Carl that Richard would frequently beat her up, and he hated that. Marie asked Carl to kill Richard for her, and in exchange for it, she would split Richard's insurance money policy with him, which was $5,000. So you get $2,500, I get $2,500, and you go kill this guy. Carl goes on to say that he needed help at this point, so he had called his best friend, Joe Cleveland, to help get rid of Richard Jackson. The plan that they had come up with was this. Carl and Richard would be driving down the road. This would all be in planned, right? Mm. With that in mind, Joe would know this, and he would start following behind them. And the idea was that Richard would, he would notice this, and it would kind of freak him out, and that would make him slow down. Carl would shoot him, whatever. Well, that didn't quite go the way it was supposed to. Richard says to Carl, "I think we're being followed." So Carl says, "Hey, pull over. Let me get out and check it out." As he pulls over, Carl gets out a gun. Richard sees it and was like, nope, hell no. Richard jumps out, panics, and starts running. As he's running, Carl exits the vehicle and shoots Richard as he's literally running away. Joe and him then get rid of the body. The thing that's a little weird here is investigators, they knew Richard Jackson had been murdered, but they were positive it was another person. Carl never even entered their mind. So this was new information. So Carl had killed five people, and Joe had helped him with most of them, except for him and his girlfriend, obviously.
Obviously.
In 2003, Carl Patton is sentenced to five consecutive life terms. Carl's wife, Norma, in exchange for her testimony against Carl, which is shocking, is sentenced only with concealing the death of another person, and she gets a year probation and $1,000 fine.
Mm-hmm. What? She narked. She gets... Yeah.
Marie Jackson Wyatt would never be charged in any of the crimes that Carl implicated her in because she died of cancer in 1998. Now, a little side note that was just a little weird here. Carl had a daughter, and she had gotten into a little bit of trouble, mm-hmm. right? And so she's also now doing a short jail stint. But because she is now considered a felon, she is no longer able to go see her father in prison. And I just thought that was a little... kind of some sweet justice, right?
Wow.
Like, yeah.
I didn't know that. Is that just a state law, do you know? Or is it that, like...
I think, well, if you're a felon, if you're a convicted felon, I know on parole, you can't interact with other felons.
Right.
Like, you will immediately get taken back. So it's probably part of her probation, uh-huh. her parole, whatever.
Yeah.
That she can't go see him, but I don't know.
Never even thought of it that way.
So that is the story of Carl, the jerk.
No, oh, he's more than a jerk.
Yeah.
Wow.
Totally. Like I said, like, you just, there's mean, but then there's really cold-blooded mean. And here's my other question. It's twofold. During that 25 years, you're telling me Carl never killed another person after he had killed five already? Nobody else came on his radar that pissed him off that he thought he could get rid of, right? That's number one. Number two, Norma, his wife, stays with him this whole time. How comfortable would you be laying your head next to this guy knowing what he did, but also that you know about it, so he might take you out? Like, I'm shocked that happened. And I'm sure she probably couldn't leave him because she was like, if I left him, he would definitely kill me. But to stay with him for 25 years?
Well, he was an abuser. We all know that that's...
No, he didn't abuse. He did not be... That was his problem with Marie and Betty Jo. Well, he would mentally, you know, maybe if I...
Right.
You tell, I'm going to kill you. But he didn't... That's why he was so mad at Fred and Richard, because they beat their wife or women, and he didn't like that. He had a problem with that. Mm. Well. But still. And so Norma, I did watch this video, a clip of her in all her glory. God love Norma. The reporter's like, Norma, why did you decide, why did you go against Carl? And she's like, it's been 25 years. It's time. And I'm thinking, those poor people, 25 years, that's a long time. And they didn't even, they barely made it to 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I don't know. It's just.
She might not have thought she had another option, you know?
No, I'm sure. When she probably was like, thank God the police came in to get him.
Right.
Like, I'm out of it too, you know? Telling you, Jen, this is what I kept saying to myself yesterday, because I was by myself all day. You mess with the bull, you're going to get the horns. And that's what I kept thinking about Carl, because it's like, you know, he's a bad guy. He's a bad dude. You're going to hang out with him. You're going to be best friends with him. He's going to get you in trouble, even if you don't kill people. But obviously, Joe Cleveland did help him. But then he tells his girlfriend, who doesn't like Carl, you know, that's just going to end badly. Let's put it that way. You live by the gun, you're going to die by the gun.
It's mafioso, bad news.
You know what I'm saying?
It's just bad news.
I'm going to apologize to our listeners. I know that was a little rough, but
it's been a while.
I was kind of out. I was not feeling my groove, my stride. I feel like I was all kind of like this. Like my cadence was a little off. Sorry about that. But
I think it was fine.
It's an interesting story. And honestly, there's not a whole lot out there on this guy.
Really?
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you would think they're, I don't but even have much just, to say about it, to be quite honest.
Right? All right, so that's it. I guess, bye. Thank you guys for being patient. Thank you for listening. All that good stuff. And until next time, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Back to the story. Mm. And now, back to the story. Once on the banks, I had to find out where we are, and I think I backed up a little bit, but that's okay. Also, unlike the first, she had clothing on, but they noticed that there's a small hole, maybe, 3 inches or so, that had been cut into the crouch area of her pants.
The crotch area, you mean?
Crouch. What did I say? Crouch?
You said crouch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry. Crouch. Well, because my mind was thinking of a little present that I have for you later. And that's what I was thinking of, because I wrote something in here a little bit later. It's just for you.
Nice.
Just for your ears. Okay,
crouch,
ready?
Sorry. Yeah.
Crouch.
My crouch itches. I've got a bad crouch.
No, wait a minute. Oh, my God. My crotch. Crotch, right?
Yes.
Crotch.
Uh-huh.
Crotch. Okay. In her lady bit parts. Can I say that? No, I'm just kidding. I won't say that. Okay. Unlike the first, she had clothing on, but police notice something a little peculiar. She has a hole that had been cut in her crouch area.
You're still saying crouch. Is there a better term than crotch?
I'm trying to think, because later on I say panties, because I know you hate it. Can I say panties then?
No,
in her pants?
You would want to know crotch.
What else would you
Sorry,
say?
Sorry, Nico. Crotch. The garment that passes between the legs, like you could put between the legs of the.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds better anyway. Okay. Sorry.
Here we go, Nico. I'm gonna focus. Crotch. Let me look up crotch. thesaurus.
There isn't. I'm looking at the word. How do you spell it? Maybe I spelled it wrong.
C-R-O-T-C-H. There's no U in it.
That's why. I put a U in there.
Yeah.
And that's probably why I was saying it wrong. Because I'm looking at it. Crouch. And I keep wanting to say crutch. And we know that's not right.
No.
Okay. I'm going to say, like, what did you say a while ago? Her pants, like, in you know, between her legs. There was a hole between her.
In.
Cut.
There was a.
Into her. Yeah.
Shit.
Nope. There wasn't any shit.
No, I know. I'm just trying to think. There's got to be another.
In her pants down in between her legs. I can say that, can't I? In her clothing in between her legs. I mean, you know what that is. It's the lady bit part.
Right.
You know. That sounds okay, though, doesn't it?
Cotton, I'm going to go with crotch. It. Ready? Yeah, just say crotch, I guess.
I'm going to say the pants in between her legs, because you know what that is. You get what that area is, you know, right? Okay, but here we go. Sorry, Nico.
I'm like looking at everybody. Panties, cotton, crotch. Gynecologist-approved underwear, crotch. Everybody's saying crotch.
Crouch.
Crotch.
Crouch.
Crotch.
Crouch.
It's not a couch. It's a crotch.
I know.
Like a crutch. Yes.
I know. Don't say that, because that's what I was saying a while ago.
Sorry, Nico. Crouch. Sorry.
In the crouch.
At least we've
crouch.
Got bloopers.
Crouch.
Crotch.
Crouch area.
In the crotch. Crotch. Like rot. Crotch.
Crotch. Crotch.
Right.
Now I've said this so much it doesn't even sound right. Okay. Let's go back. In the crouch. Crouch?
Crotch. Like
crotch.
Rot.
Crap. Like
crotch.
Crout. Oh my God.
Grout. Pout.
I'm going with pants. I'm going to go with pants because later I say panties. So I'm going to go with pants. Okay. Here we go. All right.
I'm not the only one that hates the word panties though, by the way.
I know. I know. But that's why I think it's funny. Underwear just seems like a male term. But anyway, okay. And a couch cushion that appears to have blood on it. Mm. More like a, yeah, like a couch cushion or like a, you know, something that you would sit on. Put
not
it that
a
way.
Crouch.
Shut up, Jennifer. Yeah. Shut up, Jennifer. Hold on, let me itch my ear. Okay.